coming this evening, coming Matzoi Shabbos. I was trying to wait for the flow of people to stop, but Baruch Hashem, it keeps on coming. And we're all in a schedule, so we would like to begin. Reverend Kamenetsky is with us. She's listening on the cell phone as she's driving over from the five towns. And we're privileged tonight to hear from first Rabbi Manning and then Reverend Kamenetsky. Reverend Kamenetsky is known to, I think, most of us, and she is born and bred in the neighborhood and is known throughout the country as one of the great mechanchos, one of the great women educators that Klal Yisrael is blessed to have. I've worked with Reverend Kamenetsky many, many years ago at Camp Masorah, and was always impressed with not only the wisdom with which she conducted herself, but always the concern and the compassion and the understanding of people. And over the years, her reputation and her accomplishments have only grown and grown as all of us who have connections with her students have come to recognize and realize. And therefore, we very much look forward to hearing Reverend Kamenetsky later on, and that she is one of the contributors to the Sefer that Ray Manning has authored. And she will offer the perspective of a mechaneches, which is so precious and important to all of us. Ray Manning, we've gotten to know over the course of Shabbos. I saw he was leaving Matzoi Shabbos, he was with a cane. I said, what do we do this man? He came Erev Shabbos without a cane, and Kiva Makali, he's leaving us with a cane, but I thought we were kind to you over the course of Shabbos. And Rabbi Manning has impressed us over Shabbos with his scholarship as a Talmud Chacham, Baruch Hashem, as a man of well-chosen words, and as a courageous man, because to publish and to go around the world speaking about tzniut or tznius, the human dignity, you either have to be self-employed or independently wealthy and very courageous. Over the course of Shabbos, I didn't get the impression that he was self-employed or independently wealthy. So he, Baruch Hashem, sees that this is a topic that has to be addressed and has to be addressed with an understanding, with a depth that he will describe this evening. Over the course of Shabbos, we learned with Rabbi Manning last night, and again this afternoon. This afternoon, Rabbi Manning dealt with many of the misconceptions, many of the barriers that get in the way of understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu's the Ritzon HaBoreh of the rules and the mandate and the discipline of human dignity. Over the course, later on, towards the end of Shabbos, Ray Manning described that sometimes the cobwebs that we have about what tzniut is, gets in the way of being able to be fully embraced and fully embrace the Ritzon HaBoreh in this way. Sometimes he described various chumras and the chumras that sometimes people attach to areas below the knee, below the elbow, and other kinds of chumras, that those are stringencies which sometimes get in the way of a full appreciation of the mitzvah of tznius. And tonight, Rabbi Manning will now describe the project of the Sefer and the approach of the Sefer, and with that we hope that we will help him in launching and the Sefer and launching a deeper and keener understanding of this very important area of our lives.
Good vach, everybody. I just want to again thank Rabbi Neuberger and the whole Beth Abraham community, Rabbi Cohen, Rabbi Weinberger. Really a wonderful Shabbos. I'm so thrilled to be here and so excited by the warm welcome. It's not my first trip to Teaneck. I've never had a bad Shabbos in Teaneck, and I'm glad. Bergenfield. Well, I know it depends whether you're buying or selling, and you know. But I honestly see my role this evening. I'm really here for one purpose, which is to hear Rebbetzin Kamenetsky speak. I get to see her normally when I'm running into SK and running out of SK. We have 30 seconds of conversation with each other because she's very busy and I'm very busy. So I'm really here to sit and listen to her. I see myself now just as the warm-up act to try and get the audience ready. But I can tell you a little bit about the project, how it came to be, and some of the things that it's Be'ezrat Hashem. It's okay. Still there. We're still there. Been able to achieve and will achieve. Please God. So around 3 or 4 years ago, I was approached by a student of mine from many, many, many years ago who was in Darche Bina, a woman called Brocha Polyakov, who is a well-known figure in Baltimore, well-known family in Baltimore. And she said, she approached me just before COVID. It was the end of 2019. It feels like 2019. And she said to me, look, there's a little bit of a problem, a big problem out there on SNIS. And I know that's not really your main focus, and it's true. I, Baruch Hashem, have a website, and there's 550 shirim on it. Only six of them deal with SNIS, so it's not as if I feel this is the only topic, the most important topic. I'm not fixated on this topic. But she said to me, look, she is on a lot of forums, discussion groups with women, mostly women. It's almost women, always women, which is part of the one of the things this book's trying to do is spread awareness of this to men as well. And there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of damage, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of toxic conversation. It's very hard to have any kind of discussion or conversation about this topic without things becoming very quickly very painful. And she herself is a social worker, and she said it was remarkable how overemphasized people's responses were, how hysterical was her words, hysterical people's responses were on these forums when people started talking about his sneers. And she said in social work there's an expression, she says, when it's hysterical, it's historical. Meaning there's something going on under the surface which is stopping this conversation from happening. Now, one of the things that she noted on these forums is that when people were saying, is there anything out there? Are there books out there? There's not really very much been written on this over the last 20 years in book form. Everyone has their book that they love to hate on this topic. I'm not going to name any books. But she said to me that one of the things on these forums that the people were sending the women on these forums to my website, my few shirim on this topic, which are really my presentation of Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz's Torah. Rav Yitzchak Berkowitz, who is now Rosh Yeshiva of Eish HaTorah, and I was in his kollel for a number of years, 20 years ago, and when we were in Smicha, so Rebbetzin is here. When we were in Smicha, so in addition to the normal topics he taught for Smicha, he gave us a presentation on SNIS. And at the time, we asked ourselves, like, why is he teaching a bunch of 25-year-old guys SNIS? And we realized very quickly he had a completely different perspective on SNIS, which is one that we never, ever come across before. And she said, maybe you'd like to take that Torah and turn it into a sefer. And I said, no, thank you. I'm not courageous, independently wealthy, or crazy, and therefore I'm not prepared to do that. Sorry. Then COVID happened, and she emailed me in the middle of 2020 and said, "No, like, what are you really doing now apart from sitting, trying to make Zoom work, trying to unmute yourself and work out how all those buttons work?" Which was not quite true. I was trying to run an institution, you know, during COVID, which was not straightforward. But she says, "Why don't you have a go?" And she persuaded me. She really has been the power behind the book. And the Sefer came out of that. What we did in the Sefer in the end is this is a Sefer Reclaiming Dignity. Part one is an anthology of essays by 26 leading authors, of whom Rebbetzin Kamenetsky is one, 22 other women, and 3 men. We wanted to have a few men, just to like token men, but they're not token men. They're actually amazing essays from Rav Ephraim Goldberg, Rav Shai Karlinsky, Rav Yitzhak Shurin. But the 23 women, really, which are the main focus of the part one of the book, was to try and get women from different parts of the community. And honestly, we wanted this to be a cross-community project within the Orthodox world. We have women there from the Beis Yaakov world, from the Chabad community, from the modern Orthodox, or however you wish to define these things from the religious Zionist world in Israel, in America, in England, and we really wanted to hear their perspectives on the practical issues of Tznius and the challenges it presents. And part two is Rav Berkowitz's Mahalach, worked up and expanded, etc. I was very nervous when I presented the book to Rav Berkowitz. Is he going to like it? Is he going to agree with it, etc.? It's my work at the end of the day, and he doesn't have to agree with everything I say, and I'm sure he doesn't completely, but he wrote a beautiful foreword to the book. There's a whole story to be said about how I chased around the world getting the Haskamos. That's definitely not for now, but that's another story. I just want to mention maybe two or three things because I don't want to speak at length. First of all, let me just shamelessly talk, money and the logistics. It's actually quite hard to get hold of this book, which is a good thing, I suppose. We initially printed 2,000, which they said was a lot, and they sold very, very quickly. They were pre-ordered on Amazon within literally days of Amazon opening up. That day, they'd all sold out. And since then, we've printed another 4,000. There are actually 2,000 books that are about to hit America in the next week. So right now, you won't be able to get a copy of the book. In a week or two or three, it should be available on Amazon in the shops. However, and here's your big opportunity for the night, if you want to pre-order the book, so you can sign up, there's a list over here, and you can put how many copies you'd like, and we'll have a consignment sent specifically to Bergenfield. Greg and Rebecca, my very gracious hosts, have agreed to take the books, so we can work that out, and that's no problem. You can talk to me about that afterwards. But maybe just let me say, just for 5 minutes, the issues that we were trying to address, and then I really want to hear from Rebbetzin Kamenetsky, and then we're very happy to hear questions. 5 or 6 issues, and this is what the book was meant to try and avoid. Number one, there's been an enormous overfocus on women's clothing and women's bodies on this topic, to the point that people have asked me, perfectly reasonably, how is it even sanua for a man to have any opinion or teach this topic? And the answer is, well, it's not, if Tznius was really about women's bodies and women's clothing, and that's obviously a part of it, but it's a much, much, much bigger topic, and that's what we wanted to open up by writing this book, and therefore there's far, far more to the conversation about Tznius than the things that people often focus on specifically. Number two, there's been an over-focus on dress code and rules. One of my friends in London sat down with a bunch of quite yeshivish girls and said, we're going to have a chabura, what would you like to talk about? And they said to her, we'd like to talk about Tznius. She said, are you joking? Isn't that what you talk about all day, every day? And they said, no, they never talk to us about Tznius. They just tell us rules. We have to do this, and we have to do that, and we have to do this, and we have to do that. They never give us any sources. They never tell us where it comes from. And after a while, when you keep hearing rules without sources, you begin to become a little bit suspicious. Like, why do they not have any sources? And if they don't have any sources for this, maybe they don't have any sources for anything. And you can quickly actually undermine confidence in a way which is unintended. Confidence in the halachic process by focusing always on these rules. There are thousands of sources on Tznius, and the book presents many of them, which is such a chaval that people aren't exposed to the sources. Dress code is important, but dress code and Tznius are two different things. So trying to help clarify that. A third issue, which actually is very important, is that people often misunderstand that there are different types of halacha. Much of halacha is objective. It doesn't matter who you are, where you live, when you live. If the Rambam came to Beth Abraham to teach a course in Hilchos Kashrus, he could dust off his course from Egypt 700 years ago, because chicken soup is chicken soup, and milk is milk, and if you drop one in the other, it's still the same rules, and it doesn't matter who you are, where you live, it's the 60th, etc. No one's going to say, well, Rabbi, that's so middle, medieval, now we go for a 30th. It's forget it, it's a chok. Chokim, says Rav Berkowitz, are rules that apply objectively, irrespective of where you are. But many areas of halacha are mishpatim. And mishpatim are much more subjective. There are halachas, but they have to be applied with chokhmah. We said this afternoon, et snuim chokhmah. Chokhmah, tznius is labeled specifically in the Tanakh as being for people with chokhmah. And if the Rambam were to come to Beth Abraham to teach his course on the laws of Jewish marriage, he'd need a lot of refreshers before he stands up in 2023 and talks about what is and isn't a Jewish marriage, or what is and isn't kibbud av ha'em. I don't suspect that anything that the Rambam would have had to say about kibbud av ha'em could be said today without a lot of translation and a lot of application, because it's mishpatim and not chukim. Maral says kibbud av ha'em is especially mishpatim, and Tznius is mishpatim too. So you can't just give a list of rules, one size fits all. It's just the wrong type of halacha. You've misunderstood the way that halacha works. So there's a lot about that in the book as well. Two or three last things, and then I really want to hand over to Rebbetzin Kamenetsky. Men are really clueless about this topic. Clueless. And it's a big shame because men are included in the laws of tznius, not in the same way as women, but in a much more invested way than they realize. Chazal are very careful to even the story of Kimchis that I mentioned this afternoon, who she was so tsanur and so conscious of her dignity. There's a parallel story in the Gemara about Rabbi Yossi, who was praised in the same way. No one's ever heard of that story. Everyone in this room has heard of Kimchis. I bet very few people have heard the same parallel story for Rabbi Yossi. Men need to be made aware of this, and it's really very important. I'm glad that there are lots of men here as well. Again, I'm not going to speak at length about the whole structure, because we spoke about that this afternoon. I don't think anyone was recording this afternoon's shir on Shabbos, but if anybody was, don't tell me who it was, but send me the recording, okay? and the last three points, which I think are very important. Unfortunately, tznius has been weaponized, maybe with good intentions, but with very bad results, to delegitimize different communities. Because tznius really applies in a way which is community-focused, and we talked this afternoon about how that really works halachically, people have used it as a way of looking down and judging, etc. That's a lot of the pain. Now, don't get me wrong. People will find other ways to judge people. We use this Erev, we don't use that Erev. We eat this Heksha, we don't use that Heksha. But tznius is much more personal to people's self-identity and emotional health than kashrus or eruvin, and therefore this is actually, we've got to stop this. We've got to take that judgmentalism. It's osa anyway. You're not allowed to judge any other person until you've been in their place. That's very clear. And with tznius, it causes enormous, enormous damage. And that's why there's a chapter in the book focusing on bein adam lechaveru, the way we look at others, the way we speak to others, tochacha and how the mitzvah works, avas reim. That's such an important part of tznius. And the last two points I want to make, and then I'll hand over, and we'll have time for questions as well. Two confusions which I addressed this afternoon, but there are people here who weren't here this afternoon. Number one, there's a big confusion which the book really addresses, which is key to Rav Berkowitz, between Erevah and tznius. People think that they're the same. They're really, really not. Erevah objectifies a person such that other people, when faced with people's nakedness or privacy, whatever that is exposed, are not able to say brochas, daven, etc. That is an objective halacha. But tznius is a subjective halacha. It doesn't objectify a person. Tznius is about how a person invites God into their world. A perfect example, I gave this up, perfect, but one example, somebody can be taking a shower with no clothes on, which is 100% tsanua. That is exactly how you're meant to be dressed in the shower. Nothing wrong at all. But if somebody else wants to daven mincha, no, you can't daven here. You've got to go daven somewhere else. That's a perfect example where there's lots of erevah, and therefore you can't daven, but there's no problem of tznius. The two have to be separated. They do connect, of course, and there's a whole chapter in the book on that connection. And finally, you know, a focus which I want to try and move away from is the lifnei iva issue. Like I said this afternoon, that there's many women are unfortunately taught tznius in a way which effectively makes them feel responsible for men's lack of control. That men are, as I mentioned before, basically unexploded bombs, waiting to just detonate as you walk through the street. And as the women walk out wearing what they're wearing, they're seeing these guys explode in front of them. Now, obviously, people have to be considerate, and lifnei iva is important. And the person has to have consideration for other people's, you know, mitzvah observance. But it is not the responsibility of women to dress in a certain way in order to save the souls of men. It's a consequence of the lack of consideration, but it's not the root of tznius. And that's very, very, very important. Men are responsible for their own eyes, their own thoughts, etc. And lifnei iva has its place in the halachic system, but is not central to the laws of tznius. So, look, I feel that that's all I want to say. I could talk about this topic for another 5 hours, but that is an abuse of what we're here to do. These are the basic factors that added up to the book. We are producing a second edition, which is hopefully being launched in 2024, probably in the spring. The second edition just corrects a few typos, and we have another additional essay that's in as well, but it will be a little bit more expensive. So it's kedai to buy the first edition if you can get it while you can. So I just want to, again, thank the community for hosting this event. This is an incredible, for me, it's a wonderful thing to see people want to come out. And really, and I'll finish with this line, My goal in writing this book has just been to raise the level of conversation on this important topic. It's been very hard to have a conversation on this topic in many communities, either because it turns into a toxic conversation, or people just don't feel they can even address it because they just don't know how to deal with it. And I hope, if nothing else, that the book enables a healthy, respectful, and positive, constructive conversation to happen. And with that, I really want to ask Rebsen Kamenetsky, because she's the one I want to hear, and I'm sure you want to hear as well. And thank you very much for driving across from Long Island. And really, it's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you. This is mine, I think, and this
okay.
is yours.
Thank you so much. Okay. Really, a pleasure to be here. Coming to Beth Abraham is always, and the Teaneck Bergenfield community is always very special to me. On many, many levels. And I want to thank Rabbi Neuberger for inviting me. And really thank Rabbi Manning. As Rabbi Neuberger said, he used the word courageous. And I really believe that it's very, very courageous. Not just to thank you, Rabbi Manning, for your incredible insights that are offered in a very, very clear way in the book, but really for opening up this very important conversation that many, many people have shied away from. I have to be honest, especially considering all of the possible contributors, all the contributors to the book, and there are many, and that in itself, by the way, tells you something about Rabbi Manning. Not many people are on a mission to author a book and then offer 25 other people to join on board and add their own opinions. It says a lot about who Rabbi Manning is as an individual. But there certainly were other people that could have been invited here. And I don't know that I'm any expert on the subject. I have my own personal journey and experience and relationship in trying to develop myself in the area of tzniyos. And I have been an educator of young girls for many, many years. And I do think that, therefore, maybe I have a front row seat to the tension that exists. And there is a lot of tension around this topic. I think it's important to recognize that tension exists in all communities. I have sat at Torah Masorah meetings of principals with Hasidic Minahalos, and I have been at Prisma conventions with people who are the heads of non-Orthodox of schools. And you ask anybody what are the top issues for teenage girls in particular, and it's interesting to me. Many of you know my husband is the principal of a boys' school. We talk about this a lot. Dress code in a boys' school is like a totally different game than dress code in a girls' school. In theory, it shouldn't be. But, when you tell a girl that she is, or in any way highlight that a girl may not be adhering to dress code, it is a personal offense. For a guy, it's try better, I'll try better tomorrow, Rebbe. It doesn't quite carry that same piece. But across the gamut, wherever you are, in the educational world, the biggest topics and issues really surround davening, prayer, and dress code. And I actually don't think that it is a coincidence at all that they are related. And perhaps I hope I'll hit upon that a little bit more in a few minutes. But everybody grapples with this and grapples with how, and Rabbi Manning made a very, very important distinction, because tzniut is not really dress code, but for whatever reason, it has become associated with it. And I think that is certainly an important starting point for the conversation. I think that I'd like to maybe start off by suggesting two common themes for why this conversation is so terribly uncomfortable and why people really don't like to talk about it. I'll refer to this a little bit over the next few minutes, but my own interest in trying to readdress the topic of tzniyos in schools, and I say schools because it's something which I started at SKA where I am, but I have shared this, and I know it's something which many other people are looking to do in other schools, not just now, really over the last 15 years, is the realization that it's not even being talked about in schools. I remember very clearly, it was actually 18 years ago, I walked into a senior class where I was teaching Navi. Tzniyos was not necessarily our topic. And I just asked a group of girls who I had beautiful relationships with. I'm looking around the room. I think there might even be one or two of you here right now. I kind of said to them, could you help me figure it out? Like, you're about to graduate in 3 months. Like, what's with the game? Like, it's a game. You know, you see a principal coming. I wasn't the principal at the time. You see a teacher coming. I was a teacher at the time. And you do the, like, tug, and you try to, like, pretend that you're really adhering to the dress code. Like, but we don't play games with each other. Like, we have these very clear conversations where you'll tell me what you're doing outside of school. You'll tell me about your struggle with your parents. And we're playing this, like, silly game with your skirt. Like, what's going on? And they said, well, we never learn about it. And I said, what do you mean you never learn about it? You have this halacha class. You have this. They said, yeah, but we never really learn or understand about tzniyus. And I kind of took a step back and I said, you got to be kidding. Like, that's like the oldest trick in the book. Like, you want to get a teacher off topic in a girl's high school. You raise your hand. You ask about nagiya. You ask about tzniyus. And then you ask about bechira. That's like the third one, you know? But like, that's like, those are like and they said, yeah, but nobody ever really talks about it. And I actually went into the teacher's room a little smug with, this wasn't exactly my language, but along the lines of, could you believe what they said? Like, nobody talks about it. And all of a sudden, my dear colleagues, amazing, amazing machankos, are like looking at the ceiling. They're like looking at the floor. They're looking around. And I said, wait, where do we talk about this? Where is this conversation happening? And what is going on? I had to do an own self-analysis myself about how well I address it. I was a little cocky about the fact that, of course, we do this all the time. And is there a methodical way that we think about this? Or are they kind of like side conversations that feel like tangents? When things are tangents and they aren't ekroni put into a curriculum, kids get that message that it's kind of like a tangential kind of topic and something maybe that we don't necessarily give that highest priority. At the end of the day, I actually believe that part of the reason why we don't talk about it so much is because it is this topic that makes people uncomfortable. And who wants to have uncomfortable conversations? Maybe even there are people who haven't, mature adults, and the room is full of them, who haven't quite figured this out themselves yet, exactly what their relationship is to the topic of tzniyus. And maybe we fear that even if we do have passionate, clear ideas, that if we impose them on others, then that somehow might make them uncomfortable. We certainly have enough examples anecdotally. I wouldn't actually want to hear the results of a sophisticated study of people who will look to the way they were taught about tzniyus and its direct association or it being synonymous in some way with dress code as being a source of real tension in their lives and things that didn't lead to them being inspired people in terms of their Judaism. So I think one of the common themes why this is so uncomfortable is because, as Rabbi Manning spoke about, this emphasis on externality. It feels like it's something which is just, why would God care? Why does this really matter? You hear that a lot. Doesn't Hashem really care about our kavanos? When I get dressed in the morning, man or woman, and I am a tzanua person, if it's all about my dress, there's no kavana that I have in doing it the way that I would in tefillah or in another particular mitzvah. And not only does it feel like it's empty and there's no real kavana, but it actually leads, as Rabbi Manning said, to external superficiality, to lots of judgment, to people sizing me up, to people assuming they know who I am or how much I care about Judaism or how I keep my Shabbos, simply based on the way that I am dressed. And then, as I know that Rabbi Manning has spoken about over Shabbos, there is that great tension for women about how come this is all focused on us. It feels so constraining for us. We have so many more limitations than men do. And as Rabbi Manning just referred to tonight, this Lifnei Iver concept is actually something which is difficult. I have to be responsible for somebody else's Yetzer Hara in that way. And I think, as I said, that the result of all of this discomfort is that conversation is not happening enough. And I think that we have to ask ourselves, how do we deal with the struggle? The tzniyus does present a struggle for people. These struggles where it feels as if our community and the world cares more about these externalities, where it feels as if we're being imposed upon to do things that we may not feel internally, that we're in that space to be able to do. And I think the most important thing whenever we have struggle is to acknowledge the struggle. I think the most important thing that we can do as parents, as teachers, as friends to each other is to admit that there is a struggle. And that when there is a struggle, the definition of struggle, the same thing is true for choice, means that there is merit to both sides. The answer to struggle is not to escape. The answer to struggle is not to say, therefore, it doesn't matter. If I am struggling with something or a concept, it means that either I can't make peace with it within myself, there's something within me that is having trouble accepting this, but I recognize that it's a value. Maybe I recognize it's a value because I trust that everything in the Torah has value and import. Maybe I recognize it's a value because I respect that my parents, my teachers, my school. But by virtue of the fact that we're struggling, we need to learn how to embrace struggle. Because if we're struggling with something, then there must be value to the thing that we're struggling with. Otherwise, there is no struggle. The same thing's true about choice. There's no point of choice if something is not an option to you, right? I did not have an option tonight to be in LA with my children. It wasn't an option. I finished Shabbos, I was in New York. There's no way I could possibly get to LA before midnight tonight. Not a Havamina. There was a possibility of coming to Teaneck. It took me a little longer than I thought, right? But I made a choice to get into the car and to come here because it was within the realm of possibility. It was something that was on the table. And I think that's important to realize that if we are men or women who struggle with this concept, that doesn't mean that we're off the pale. It means that we're in the game. It means that we see it as a value, and I have seen this over and over and over again with young people. Very few of them are asking their questions because they want nothing to do with it. They're asking their question because they see it as a value, but they can't always make sense of it. So we need to welcome those questions. We need to embrace those questions. And we need to embrace the overall concept of struggle. I think it's important to recognize, certainly in these parshios, that all of Judaism is about struggle. All of Judaism is about nisyonos. It's about tensions. It's about creating these points of choice and struggle. And that's something that we see as a vehicle through which we can grow ultimately closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam. As Rabbi Manning said, I think another important thing in light of the tension around this subject is to be asking ourselves about how we message about tzniut. As Rabbi Manning said very clearly, and I think we all know and certainly have heard, it's definitely not all about dress. And therefore, we need to be sure that we don't use it in a synonymous way with our dress code. I know at SKA, and I know this is something which is done in many schools, our dress code is divided into two distinct parts. The fact that you're not allowed to wear flip-flops to school is not in the section that has anything to do with tznius. It has to do with the section of creating a proper environment for learning. That is not something that's there under that category. Because our posek felt that that was not a tzanua concept, but rather in other communities it might be considered, as Rabbi Manning said, the objectivity and the subjectivity. But we need to be clear in our language and in our definitions. It's very interesting to me that if we were to use the word tzanua, and this just happened to me last night at a very, very poignant moment in the Young Israel of Woodmary after Kabbalah Shabbos, if we were to use the word tzanua to describe somebody in a complimentary way, and I just used it last night when I came home from shul, my husband was davening in a different shul. I was in the Young Israel of Woodmere, which is not the shul that I usually daven in. I'm going to be honest, I'm not always at Kabbalah Shabbos. I have to thank my daughter who said, as I lit candles, Ima, maybe we should go to shul tonight. And we did. And in the Young Israel of Woodmere, there was an unbelievable setting right after Kabbalah Shabbos with the shul gathered around 1,400 tea lights. And we were in the large gym of the Young Israel of Woodmere, and everybody sang together, and we had the schus in Woodmere, as I know you here in Bergenfield have often with some frequency, to have Rav Herschel Schechter and his Revitzin with us there for Shabbos. And they were visiting their son, Rav Shai Schechter, who set this up, and Rabbi Axelrod spoke for a few minutes, and then Rav Schechter spoke for a very few minutes. And I watched Rav Schechter standing there by the candle singing with all of the congregants of the Young Israel of Woodmere, in his incredible, inimitable way, which I could only call tzanua. He was a man of absolute spirituality, kulo Torah, humble beyond belief, did not dominate in any way in the room, and yet we all knew we were standing in the presence of greatness. If we use the word tzanua to describe people the likes of Rav Schechter, Rav Meir Tversky, Rabbi Neuberger, and so many others who carry themselves with that tzanua manner. I don't even want to translate it, but certainly as Rabbi Manning talks about dignity, spirituality, then we are changing the face of the perception of that word. It needs to become the synonym for self-respect, for privacy, and for dignity. And I think we need to show sources. Frankly, I actually don't find that I need to show more than one source to my high school age students. Rabbi Manning has done us a tremendous service by making more sources available. But perhaps the turning point for many is the famous pasuk in Micha. Higid lecha adam ma tov u ma Hashem doresh mimcha ki amasot mishpat v'avat chesed v'atznei lechet im elokecha. And I always point out to my students, first and foremost, higid lecha adam. This is not a concept which is being given to women. This is for all mankind, and it makes the big three, along with asot mishpat and ahavat chesed. This is an intrinsic value, a fundamental concept that involves everybody. And you know what I say? You think it's a mitzvah bein adam lechaveiro, because unfortunately that is the myth and the way it's been presented, that it's somehow lifnei iver lo sitein michshol, and there may be an element of that. But begadol, that's not what it's about. It's actually a mitzvah bein adam lemakom. Hatznei lechet im elokecha. That this is something which is actually all about our relationship with Hashem. It's not about inappropriate relationships with the opposite gender. It's actually about developing and creating a relationship im elokecha. The radak on that pasuk is absolutely stunning. V'yavato b'chol levavo b'chol nafsho v'amar hatznei ki davar hazem masur lalev. The Radak tells us that when we are talking about tzniut, we're talking about something deeply internal. We're talking about something which lies within ourselves, in our heart and our soul. And it is found in concepts like privacy, dignity, and self-respect. I'll refer you actually to a few things in just my last few words here. There is a phenomenal article by Rabbi Lamb entitled Tzniut, which actually highlights and talks about the fact that the reason why this is such a value is because Kedusha that lies within each and every one of us as we're Nivra B'Tzel Elokim, thrives in hiddenness. He makes an incredible observation that when we talk about the most important person in Klal Yisrael would be the Kohen Gadol, the holiest person, I should say. On the holiest day of the year, Yom Kippur, in the holiest place, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it happened in absolute hiddenness, in absolute privacy. Nobody knew what was going on in there. You were to compare that to modern day times, where perhaps the greatest football team on the greatest day of the football season, right, in the place of the Super Bowl, is watched by billions of people. People fly, people fill the stadium, people sell tickets at crazy prices. Hopefully people make good profits that way, right? Whatever it might be, right? That all happens, and the advertisements are through the roof. Why? Because that's the way the secular world views. For us, Kedusha thrives ultimately in hiddenness. On some levels, it's relieving to hear that this is the Torah perspective. But I actually believe that sometimes this adds a little bit to the tension. Because if to be tzanua is really so internal and so pnimi, that means that just like inner work, when we're working on ourselves emotionally, trying to work through whether it's anxiety or feelings of happiness or sadness, is really hard work. And just like avodas hamidos is really hard work, anything that we know that's internal is actually really, really difficult. We refer to tefillah and the connection to Hashem as an avodah shebalev. Then developing a true sense of being a tzanua is hard. It's difficult. It's something which doesn't just automatically come, isn't genetic to people. I'd like to suggest that perhaps that's the reason why over the decades there has been so much emphasis on the external. Because anything external is so much easier not just to judge by, but to actually do and perform. It's easier to act like you're davening and flip and turn the pages than to actually be able to develop that inner sense of kavana. And I think that in addition to that, we are unfortunately living in a world which is, in general, hyper-focused on those externals. And we have a tremendous challenge today in re-accessing those values because they are so far from what we see in today's society. Any parables that have ever been used, certainly in my youth and well past that, of anything that's precious to you, a jewel or a pearl you keep private and you keep hidden, they're meaningless in today's world. Nothing happens or has value or has purpose unless it's shared and posted all over the place. Respect in general is certainly in the greater society on the decline. And boundaries and self-respect. I can share anything and I should share anything, for anything from talking loudly on a cell phone and everybody needs to hear about your appointment and when it's going to be, and frankly far worse than that, that I know about total strangers in the supermarket or maybe people who I know, which is on some level even more embarrassing. And obviously the creation of the entire concept of reality TV entering into people's homes in real time. We are in a world which does not appreciate so much of what being a tzanua actually represents. I do think, though, that while all of this contributes to the tension and to the difficulty with this topic, one other thing that we need to think about is that's gullus. That's exactly what it means to be in gullus and mefuzar bein ha'amim, where our values and the things which we hold dear and precious are not aligned with the world at large. Personally, and obviously now with everything going on, we have so many more reasons to be davening hard for Yeshuos and for Be'ezrat Hashem, Bias HaMashiach. But I know myself that at one point it kind of clicked in my head that the fact that there's a struggle with this, that's actually something which helps me yearn even more for the time of Bayom Hahu Yiyah Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, where that struggle again doesn't mean that the concept is a bad concept, but rather it means that perhaps I need to try to access it harder. And that's the challenge of ultimately what it means to be a gullus Jew. I want to conclude my comments and then we'll take some questions with really some very clear ideas of, so what can we do in light of all of the tension that surrounds this particular topic? So as I mentioned before, we need to be using the term tzanua appropriately. It's not synonymous with dress code. It's not what we say when we're shopping, either for boys or for girls, because again, as Rabbi Manning said, there's definitely laws and hashkafos of being tzanua that apply to men as well. When we don't like something that they're choosing to wear, you don't say, sorry, that's not tzanua. I once heard a woman in a grocery store, and but she clearly did not, it was a kosher grocery store. She clearly did not want her child to have the sugary snack that was there at the checkout counter, so she said to him, it's not kosher. I feel like when we use the word tzanua inappropriately, we are diluting the meaning, and we are only taking away any sense of trust that people have in us. Additionally, as Rabbi Neuberger introduced Rabbi Manning this evening, Rabbi Manning had spoken about the differences between halachos and chumros, and how sometimes the attachment of chumros as halachos can make this particular topic very, very murky. I think it's very important to be very clear with our daughters, with my students, about what that is. I share this right now because it was beyond not pre-planned. It was something which literally just happened in the most spontaneous way. Halavai, I should be such a good parent in other areas. But way up there in my biggest wins in parenting was with my daughter many years ago. She was Baruch Hashem. Many of you know her, Shoshana Steinmetz. She was really Baruch Hashem, a wonderful child to raise. She, Baruch Hashem, is a young woman who carries herself with a tremendous sense of tzinius. But she was in seventh grade, and she was asking to do something which I knew wasn't terribly wrong, but did not feel like the way I was a relatively new parent. She's my oldest daughter. It was not exactly the way I envisioned the script going. And when she asked me, and we went back and forth, and she was smart enough to say, but is it halacha? Is it something that I have to do? And I was feeling caught. And I looked at her, and I totally did not expect him to answer. I said, let's call our family Rav, Rav Mordechai Willig, and see what he has to say. And he answered. He picked up. And I was really stuck now. And guess what? He told me she was right, and I was wrong. Win, win, win. Because when our children see that when we are struggling in some way, that there are people who can help us verify what is or isn't. And afterwards, I'll just share this addendum. I spoke to him a few days later, and I said, Rebbe, I'm just curious, did you say that because you think that it's good for somebody to grow in their own areas, etc. I was given a whole Torah about why it was really right or good. He goes, no, just doesn't have to do it, right? That was straight out that way. That we need to understand these concepts and need to be clear about what is and ultimately what isn't in that way. I also believe strongly, and this is something which we need to be highlighting, the values of what tznius really is, not just as not associating it with things that it isn't, but those values of privacy, self-respect, personal boundaries. Parents should not be reading children's personal diaries or writings. Children should understand that there are things that parents have that they shouldn't have access to. I don't know if I agree that every child should have a parent's code on the phone. Not even because there's something so horrible there that they'll see or so inappropriate, but there are boundaries. That there are certain rooms in the house that maybe you don't come into or certainly that you knock before walking into. I actually recently heard, and it's honestly very disturbing to me, this tracking system that I've known for years that parents can track their children with. Different conversation for a different time. Obviously, if we're concerned for safety, it would be something different. But there are questions there in my mind about how that should be used and where that should be used. Recently, I heard that teenage girls track each other. Maybe teenage boys too. I only know about teenage girls in this context. That is something which we need to speak about and address. A person has a right to their personal boundary and privacy. Even if you're my very good friend, you do not need to know where I am at all times. That is not okay. But that is becoming a norm in our world and our society. And by addressing these underlying principles, we are helping to support the definition of what tznius really is. So it's not just about unhealthy relationships, but it's about promoting the values ultimately of tznius. And perhaps, I don't want to say lastly, because it's by far most importantly, we need to be talking more about Hashem. If we really believe that this isn't about externalities, but rather about developing an internal relationship with Hashem, Atzei Lechet Em Elokecha, how much is Hashem really in our lives and our world? I did a little self-test for myself about a year after I did the modesty conversation test, and I asked myself, how much do I really speak to my students about God? That sounds crazy. I'm a Tanakh teacher. I teach Machshava. Of course I talk about Hashem. So I make a lot of references to Hashem. But how much do I really talk about my own relationship with Hashem? Or what it means to develop a relationship with Hashem? These things are abstract. They don't necessarily belong in every conversation. But we need to ask ourselves, what are we doing if we expect people to look at this as a beautiful internal value, but we aren't really ever talking about Hashem and how to relate to him? And here's where I do believe there are all these parallels to tefillah. We could teach Be'er tefillah from here till tomorrow. We could teach Hilchos tefillah from here till tomorrow. But if we're not encouraging spirituality, if we're not encouraging people to think about themselves as godly people and connecting to the Borei Olam, then we are ultimately missing the boat. And therefore, even though people are conflicted, it is so important to be having these kinds of conversations, but also to be having conversations amongst each other as peers at whatever stage of life you're in, and certainly to those of us who have the opportunity to be mashpia upon young people. I actually believe that it's important to recognize that this concept is not really unique to tznius. It too gets a lot of press because of the externality of tznius. But the lack of spirituality in our lives and the lack of our ability to be thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is certainly something which many people have noted is a machla in our generation. And again, I have only lived in our generation, so I have to assume that it's not terribly unique, though, to other generations, but it's something that we are grappling with. And as I said before, if we as adults are conflicted, I believe we should be sharing those conflicts. Whether that's about whether or not to purchase a certain item of clothing, is it, isn't it, I really like it, but I don't know if it's really appropriate. Maybe it's about how to write a bio. I've been asked to present a bio for something that's going to be published. What about me? Should I put in there what's appropriate, what's not to be appropriate? All of this shows that it is something which is beyond dress and are important conversations to be having. When we talk about spirituality, I'm going to be very honest and straight. I think talking about spirituality makes a lot of people uncomfortable. I think people are themselves are not so comfortable with it in that way. And I just want to charge everybody with actually an important idea. And that is, obviously, we know that we were each Nivra B'Tzelem Elokim. That as Shlomo Carlbach would have said, that Pintel Yid lies within each and every one of us and is waiting to be connected and touched. That's why people are struggling. Like I said, if they didn't really have a desire to know or understand or connect, they would be out of here. They wouldn't even be engaging in the conversation in any meaningful way. Another excellent book written by somebody who is not observant. She is Jewish and very traditional. Highly recommend it. Book by Lisa Miller called The Spiritual Child. And she actually has done studies among all religions about how people look to connect to spirituality. And she has come to the conclusion that people are born with innate spirituality. As we know, they're born with nefesh. They're born with Tzelem Elokim. They are people who ultimately want to connect. It's just a question of whether or not we nurture that or we unfortunately subdue it in some way. And perhaps the biggest proof of that fact is the incredible success of Rabbi Manning's book. Rabbi Manning's book, well, I don't even know what printing it flew off the shelves in just a few weeks. It was very hard to access. I had a copy in my office in school. I had person after person coming in saying, where'd you get that? Where'd you get that? People are curious to learn more. We shouldn't be shy about having these conversations. We should recognize that people are yearning to understand and to connect. And if I can just add that certainly in times of vulnerability, right now we are recognizing very clearly that everything that we may have understood as an external reality is anything but the case. The words that I shared with my students on Istruchag here in America, coming back after the absolute horrific, and we didn't even understand that, how horrific it was, of everything that happened on Shmini Atzeres, Simchas Torah, and Eretz Yisrael. So obvious. Ein lanu al mi lehisha'ein, ela avinu shebashamayim. More and more people are recognizing that loud and clear. They're looking to connect spiritually, and it's up to us to have these conversations, to try to engage in the values that lie behind everything that is about being tzanua for men and for women. And it is my absolute belief that when we start talking this language, we will not only see people embracing the concept in its fullest way of what it means to be tzanua, but the other age-old problem that we have as adults and certainly that we have in educating children of tefillah will also be given a tremendous, tremendous boost. Because after all, it's really about hatznei lechet im elokecha. To be a tzanua is somebody who walks with God. Somebody who walks with their understanding of their pnimius, who walks with the understanding that we are spiritual beings whose goal and role on this earth is to only rise higher and higher and closer to the Ribono Sha'olam. Thank you. Take a second question, James. Is that about 10?
Not much. 10 minutes.
Okay, whatever you want. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very, very much. We have Rabbi Zakamanetsky has to get back to Long Island for another appointment. And Rabbi Newberg also has to get a label for another appointment. We're a very late night group of people here. So, but we have like maybe 10 minutes. I'm happy to take questions. If there's anything specific you'd like to address to Representative Kamenetsky or to myself or to both of us, if anyone has any questions, then I'm very happy to hear them. Yes, sir.
If we wanted to bring this into high school, is there a curriculum that's been developed or teacher training or anything like that? Or is it just each school developed based on the book?
I mean, let me start with that. The answer to your question is that everybody says that there should be one. I have had specific conversations with a number of people. Rebbe Shani Tarragon is working with me on one, but we're all very busy, and it's not happening as fast as, from my angle, as I'd like. I will have more information on that in about a week and a half. Over the next week and a half, I'll be visiting about 25 high schools. in LA, in Chicago, in Silver Spring, in New York, in New Jersey. And in every single one of those places, I'm going to speak to people about this. And I think that the book is a good starting point for a curriculum on this issue, and therefore I very much hope that they will be. I know for a fact that in the Beis Yaakov world, there's someone in the book who's called Fegi Seltzer. She's developed an excellent curriculum well before this book for a new approach to SNESes in the Beis Yaakov world. It's not exactly what Robert Berkowitz, you know, says, but there are people working on that. But this should be an impetus to that. So it's just a question of focusing people on it. And I may find out in the 2 weeks from now that actually, yes, there are people beavering away working on that, which I really hope that there are. But thank you for raising it. It is very important because, you know, to bring it practically into schools is critical.
I will just add that Rebbetzin Seltzer's curriculum is called Pnimim. It's something which is actually available for women as well as for high school girls. It definitely does have a Beis Yaakov, you know, kind of genre to it. And I don't necessarily recommend it for all high schools to pick it up as a curriculum, but it might be something that people would be interested in looking at and adapting. Additionally, there's a group of women led by Chana Noah Gelbfish who's put out a curriculum, I don't know, Rabbi Manning, if you're familiar with this, called Foundations. It has been picked up by the Consortium of Jewish Day Schools run by Rabbi Heshi Glass. And they do some teacher training on general machshava topics that are all rooted in developing spirituality. And one of her units is on what it means to be a tzanua. She would be, I can connect you, she'd be a good person to speak to. And they do have teacher training on a regular basis. We have trained teachers there and are using that curriculum, piloting that curriculum. We started last year and we continued this year. So if anybody's interested in information, I'm in touch with many of the people in schools out here. I'm, of course, happy to share and connect people. But we still all anxiously await a curriculum from Rabbi Manning. His book is really excellent.
No questions on this topic at all. Yes.
Robertson Kamenetsky, what would you say to a child who says, it's my body, I want to do what I want to do?
So to me, I think that it's very hard to answer that question without knowing the child and the circumstances that surround all of that, because for sure there's more to the child's overall experiences. I do think that this separation of halacha and understanding what is halacha, I don't know what the child's attitude is to overall halacha, is a very important starting point. And working with that in that way. And listen, there are people who will say that about Shabbos. You know, we have children in our homes who, you know, aren't interested in keeping Shabbos the way that we keep. To me, and I think that's a very important point to make about this topic, and I made a slight reference to it. People look at tznius as like this, like, you know, I don't know, it's like in its own category and its own, and I think as a world, we've kind of created that. I don't know. I've had my own children say, I don't want to daven. You know, I don't want to keep Shabbos. To me, it would be no different than the way that you would approach those kinds of conversations, depending on who the child is. And I think that's an important perspective for us to have. It has many more external factors. I mean, I don't want to ask for a show of hands of how many of you have ever battled with a child on a Sunday morning to daven. I have to imagine we all have, right? But nobody else knows about that. You know what I'm saying? That doesn't. So there are those implications of how it looks for me and what other people will say. And we got to be big adults. We got to work through that. And we have to help be mechanech our children to grow in Yiddishkeit as best as they can.
One thing I would just mention, and I don't go around the world giving parenting advice, I think it's very important to pick your moments. There's a great time to have a conversation on sneers when nobody's really thinking about the emotive parts of it. Maybe when you're on a road trip and you've got an hour with a kid who can't escape from the car and jump out or whatever.
Not in the dressing room of the store, that's
right,
for sure.
Right, the time not to have a conversation, and I've had these conversations and I regret them, is when a kid's walking out of the house and it's like, you can't go out wearing that. Don't tell me. That is the worst time to have any sensible conversation about anything. So it's a question of having the gvura to hold back from the conversation then and having it when it gets much more of a productive. And look, that's not rocket science, but I think it's very important. Couple more questions, and then, yes, sir.
Question that I have is, dealing with what we stereotype today as kids at risk or girls at risk, do we believe that the girl was born to be immodest, or somewhere along the line, the boy or the girl, something happened to them that made them immodest?
It's an interesting question. Do you want to come in on that, or shall I come in on that? Look, it's a question about everything. How much is it nature? How much is it nurture? The Rambam says very clearly in Hilchos Deos that every single person is made up of different combination of aspects that they're born that way. In every midah in life, in anger, in gaiva, etc., some of them are DNA, what you and I would call, we're more inclined to that. Some of them are nurture, some of them are bad experiences that we've had, some of them are just things we've learned. We're all a massive combination of all the things. We certainly do not believe that people are born in sin. You know, we say that every morning, where we have a pure neshama, but we're born with different challenges. So I would never personally say someone is born to be immodest any more than they're born to be violent or they're born to be arrogant. They are a product of, and some people will have a harder time with it, for sure. And mipum schara agra, you know, everybody at the end of the day has the schar depending on how hard it is for them to do it. For some people it's not an insight. For other people it's incredibly difficult. And for men, they cannot understand the way that women relate to this. That's why these conversations have to be happening between people who are able to relate to these matters in a similar way, I think.
So how would you explain the way that the Rebbeinu Shlomo created us, each and every individual?
Luckily, I don't have any responsibility to explain a Kodesh Baruch Hu's understanding of the world. As a rabbi, I don't speak for God. I don't, honestly. And it irritates me when people do. But we know, the Torah is telling us that we have challenges. That pasuk is telling us that we have a Yetzer Hara which is now inside us and internal to us, and every single different person in this room has a different type of Yetzer Hara, and that we have to deal with it, recognizing that it is something which is part of us and that we can't ignore or suppress. More than that, it really is an individual thing, and Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to do, as far as I can see from the Torah, is telling us the best that we can with each individual, the best that they can.
I would just add that there's no question that for women, I made reference to this, and it's again, like I said, it's a conversation my husband and I have all the time. You know, he can be in the perm spiel at his boy's high school for the hand motions that he makes about a boy tucking in his shirt if that's part of his dress code, or you know, at one point it was about certain types of sneakers or whatever, and they like make fun of it. For women, and it's just a theme in the questions a little bit. My body. You know, it's an expression you said of a kid who's at risk. As I mentioned before, a kid at risk means there's probably issues with Shabbos and Tefillah and a bunch of kashrus maybe and a bunch of other things too. But there is no question that, you know, a woman and the way that she appears and her self-confidence and her sense of self is definitely deeply connected to her chitzonius. So that when one comments on somebody's dress in any way, and frankly, we notice it also in a different way, then it's going to be and feel much more personal, which is another tremendous gain in speaking about the values and the underpinnings of tznius and away from what you're actually wearing. Rabbi Manning discusses this in the book. It should never be at the expense of the halacha. The halacha is a halacha. We're not dancing around it. We're not saying that it isn't. But again, there's a lot of halachos that I may not fully connect to. I personally shake a lulav and esrog, and I can't say it's a hot religious high that I get out of it. I've read a lot. I've learned about it. Occasionally, I can hold on to an idea that makes it more inspiring. But there's also an element of my avodas Hashem that isn't always that way also, and that's an important thing to acknowledge.
I think there'll be one more question, or maybe two. Yes. The lady with the blue coat, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to point out, I had a similar situation. My daughter was questioning, so yes. I told her to reach out to our own Teshi Neuberger, which she did. And Teshi had an open door. She actually went to her house, and she was very, she was amazing.
Ashrechem.
A lot of the issues can be resolved just by the way that we treat other people. Beiladam lechaveru. A lot of the pain that I hear about is people who've just, frankly, been spoken to in just an inappropriate way for anybody. And if we can take that out of it, we don't solve all the issues, but I bet we can resolve at least half of them.
Yeah, and I'll add that that's part of validating the struggle and being a part of that. That conversation. I'll also, I know Rabbi Neuberger could probably support this, but I actually heard it from Rabbi Heshi Billet. He bemoaned, it must have been 20 years ago, that he gets so many shilos, Bein Adam, you know, I guess he at the time he said it was Ben Adam Lamakom. Obviously, we're talking about Tznius also in that category as well. But what he really meant was he gets Kashra Shilas and he gets Anida Shila here and there. He said, Halavai, I should get Shilos in people struggling with their mitzvos or their mitzvah observance or whatever it might be. And he said, I look for that. I want that. That's part of what it means to be a spiritual leader, to be somebody who wants to help people connect more to the Rabbono Shalom. So as I said, Ashreichem, that you have wonderful Rebbes and Rebbetzins in this community for sure, but it's something to consider taking advantage of. And may I say, not in the formal bat mitzvah club. That's nice and that's important, but nowhere near as effective as a one-on-one conversation with a question that you have that's really coming from your space.
I'm very conscious of the Rebbetzin's time and the Rav's time as well. I think we should leave it there. Thank you very, very much for allowing the conversation and for promoting the conversation. If anybody is interested in signing up for a copy of the book at a discount, you can do that up here. Thank you, Rebbetzin Kamenetsky. And good talks to everybody.